Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
You know what my favorite text is? A waypoint in the Onyx Hunt app to a goblin turkey. The list on the Onyx Hunt app features for chasing turkeys is long, but knowing exact public and private boundaries and land ownership details will help you find more places to hunt, whether that's on public or private. I'll be toting the Hunt app through the spring woods in a few states this year, and I recommend you do the same if you want more turkeys on your table. Also, Onyx has a special offer for you. Use code BEARGREASE to receive 20% off your membership at onyxmaps.com/hunt this spring. Maui Nui is on a mission to help balance axis deer populations for the good of our environment, communities, and food systems on the island of Maui. They've shared over 126,000 pounds of nutrient-dense protein with the Maui community. Secure your spot now, become a snack subscriber, and join in helping to build more resilient food and ecosystems on Maui. Visit MauiNuiVenison.com, that's MauiNuiVenison.com, and use promo code BEAR for 20% off your first order. My name is Clay Newcomb, and this is a production of the Bear Grease Podcast called the Bear Grease Render, where we render down, dive deeper, and look behind the scenes of the actual Bear Grease Podcast. Presented by FHF Gear, American-made, purpose-built hunting and fishing gear that's designed to be as rugged as the places we explore.
Carry on.
On my shoulder.
Don't worry, it's a flintlock.
Well, I would say that we have our first guest on the Bear Grease Render or podcast that is wearing buckskins.
Oh, yeah.
And this is big.
Yeah. Very, very stylish.
Yeah. So we have a very special guest with us today. We have most of the regular crew here. We have Misty Newcomb. Let me introduce and then I'll introduce our guests. We have Misty Newcomb here.
Hello.
We have Josh Lambridge,
greetings,
filmmaker.
Everyone.
Brent Reeves of This Country Life podcast.
Yo!
Who, Misty, I've learned that Josh and Brent have a secret friendship outside of the render going on.
Oh, really?
They've been fishing together all day.
Brent came and stayed with me last night. We went
fishing. And they didn't even tell me.
And you weren't even invited.
I wasn't even invited.
Well, even bigger deal, I wasn't invited.
Wait, you didn't tell them all.
And our little secret.
And even made Ava made banana bread for us
while we were gone.
Oh, it was so good.
Ava's, when's the last time Ava made me and Misty banana bread?
Was that?
In a while.
Actually, Ava, Ava takes pretty good care of me at school.
she's a good one.
So
she's a keeper.
So we have the regular crew. And I want to say, too, Gary Believer Newcomb has been...
God rest his soul.
He is alive and well. He is fine. Dad had... he had both his knees replaced.
Oh, my.
That's why he hadn't been on the render. You didn't know that?
No.
We used to be friends back before you started hanging out with Brent.
I knew it.
Dad had both his knees replaced in early May. And so he's been out, but he's going to come back bigger than ever.
Strong.
Yeah. So that's where Dad has been. But our special guest is Andrew Wills
from...
Thanks for
Nashville,
having me.
Nashville, Tennessee.
Nash, Vegas.
Excuse me, but can Brent please give a proper intro to Andrew and describe his attire?
Here's Andrew.
What
are we doing?
Andrew's wearing
a very, I would say, comfortable yet sturdy pair of lace-up leather boots. Dungarees, the folks might say, and a very festive and fashionable buckskin shirt with tassels and tied front.
Fringe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you call them? Fringe?
Fringe.
Fringe sleeve.
Swanky.
I like
it. Yeah, very nice.
Yeah.
Over top of my
Which is just his normal attire. I mean, that's what he is every day.
That's not untrue.
Ask my wife.
Yeah. So, so Andrew and I, we've probably known each other for maybe a year or so. Mm-hmm. And Andrew is the guy that recorded and helped me write parts of The Ballad of Warner Glenn.
That's right.
Excellent. Which is fantastic, by the way.
Excellent job.
Yeah. Yeah, so you can
find
that.
It's way better than what Clay had.
That's true.
It's not false.
True. Mm-hmm. No, so the story was, is that I think, Andrew, you had sent an email out to me about your brand and band called Hawk and Horse.
Right.
And you were coming out with an album.
That's right.
What was the album's name?
It was self-titled. Hawk and Horse was the name of the album. And it was a project that I took on to really kind of capture the frontier spirit. And I had a couple people say, you need to send that to Clay Newcomb. So I started digging and I was like, whoa.
What's a Clay Newcomb?
Yeah. Well, I heard the Daniel Boone series when I was driving to Wisconsin during deer season, and I was like, what? This guy gets it. So that's when I was inspired to send, you know, my album over.
Well, and so the album is, it's about the American West.
Yeah.
You have a song, Jeremiah Johnson. Mm-hmm. You have, what are some of the other songs about?
They're about fur trappers. They're about mountain men. Very inspired by the movie Jeremiah Johnson.
Yeah.
Inspired by, you know, Last of the Mohicans, but also like books and famous frontiersmen like Daniel Boone, Davy Crockett. I just put out another album called Long Hunter, and it's all inspired by the Kentucky-Tennessee frontier of the late 1700s. And frontiersmen like Daniel Boone and Simon Kenton, and a lot of those characters and, you know, amazing stories from that era. So,
but in Nashville,
yeah,
the reason you live in Nashville is because you're a songwriter.
That's
what you do
correct.
For a living.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Tell us about that.
Yeah. So I have.
Wait. Let me see. Hold on. There could be a few things that you could have been that would be more interesting to me.
Oh, okay.
Number one, commercial fisherman on the Mississippi River.
Okay.
That especially, would be slightly.
But this is a fad. Like, he's infatuated with it right now.
That would be slightly more interesting.
On Clay's interest.
Number two, okay, just commercial fisherman on the Mississippi River. That would be the only thing. Second on the list would be a Nashville songwriter.
Yeah.
So tell me, like, how do you be a Nashville songwriter? And how do you make money?
So. Music.
How much money do you have?
Yeah. Not
what's
a lot.
Your net worth?
I literally on the drive out here, I realized either my wife or my daughter took the cash out of my wallet. So not much. But I love music. I always loved music. I grew up with music. Guitar, I picked up a guitar about 15 and just taught myself how to play. And my first instinct was to write a song. I wasn't like listening to the radio going, all right, how do I play One Headlight? I was wanting to write a song.
Know exactly how old Andrew is.
Exactly. I've exposed myself. But I wanted to write songs, and that's immediately what I started to do. And so it was around that time that my son was born, who has some special needs, and we were kind of going through a part of my life where we're like, what are we going to do? And I was like, I'm going to have to stay home with him right now because he's so bad and he can't go to school or anything right now. So I was like, I guess I'm going to start doing this songwriting thing. Cause I had been in the outdoor industry before. I worked within the backpacking industry.
Okay.
And I was a buyer. So I had a very practical, I was using my business management degree, and I was like doing this, and then suddenly I was like, I guess I'm going to start writing these songs. And within 6 months of me starting this, I won a contest, and then I got a co-write with Andy Griggs, who was a late 90s, early 2000s country singer.
And you know that name, Brent?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, he had a couple
pretty big hits like You Won't Ever Be Lonely and If Heaven and some other. He was right at late 90s. And anyway, he's a big hunter. And anyway, I got the opportunity to write with him, and he's a riot. I mean, he is hilarious. But I got my first radio single with him, and it was just a small market thing, and it was pretty cool.
Can you tell us the song? Do you
want
to?
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. It's called.
Is that kind of like asking a cattle farmer how many cows he has when you hear a Nashville songwriter go, "Yeah, I had a song on the radio," and you go, "What was it?" And then he's like,
"Hotel California."
Yeah, you know.
Like, you may have heard it,
or it's some song we've never heard of, and we're like, "Oh, I bet. Oh, okay."
Yeah, no, this is a song you've probably never heard of, but but it's called "Can I Get an Amen?" And he put that out, and it was and I made hundreds of dollars. It was amazing, but I got hooked, and so not long after that, my wife's job, she was kind of getting over it, and I was like, we could go to Nashville. And so,
where were we all living at this time?
We were in Southeast Ohio at the time, and
backpacking Mecca.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah.
Backpacking and turkey poaching Mecca.
Yes. Yeah. Actually, on that podcast about the turkey poaching really hit home, because I literally had my AC unit stolen off the side of my house.
Are you serious?
Oh yeah. Same areas.
Dang turkey poachers.
Yeah.
Sure, poachers. The same people.
Yeah. But we moved down, and I had already built.
So your wife had a job where she could work.
Correct.
Just about anywhere.
Correct.
And you were like, hey, we can move to Nashville.
Yeah.
You're like,
yeah.
I'm a famous songwriter now, honey.
I've made hundreds of dollars.
This sounds like something I would do, Andrew.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. I'm just thinking about your wife must just be a really great person.
She's a lot better than me. But she was extremely supportive. And so we were like, let's do it. And my son, I think, was like 6, and my daughter was 2. And we're like, let's go for it. This is a good time to do it. So we moved down, and I instantly started, you know, expanding my network and writing with, you know, notching up on who I was writing with and learning a lot. Cause I figured out real quickly how green I was, and there was a lot to learn. And I'm very, very blessed. I had some like incredible mentors who wrote some incredible songs, and,
name drop. We want to hear them.
Okay. One of my favorite mentors early on was Craig Bickhart, who he had some hits back in the 80s, like In Between Dances for, who was that? Pam Tillis or something.
Okay.
And
now
then
we're back to Misty's era.
Yep.
Yeah.
And country music.
And, but then he was part of a band called SKB. It used to be SKO. And they had like, There's No Easy Horses. And they were on tour with Alabama back in the late 80s. Know. But he is a fantastic songwriter. And I learned a whole lot from him. But then Rivers Rutherford, who is a legend. I mean, he wrote like When I Get Where I'm Going. He wrote, you know, huge Brooks and Dunn songs. I can't remember everybody else's songs, but I could barely remember my own.
A real good man.
Yes. So,
Brooks
yes.
and Dunn.
Yes. Tim McGraw, real good man.
So when you're a songwriter.
Yeah.
Okay, describe to me. Okay, so your family's moved to Nashville,
right?
And you're being mentored, and mm-hmm. you're actually in that world,
yeah.
Getting paid to write songs.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me how the song world works, because now you're Hawk and Horse is kind of like this personal thing that you do.
Correct.
Your songwriting is much different than that, because you're writing stuff not about frontiersmen.
Right.
You're like working. And I guess the goal would be to write some number one song that's on the radio.
Exactly. Right.
I mean, that's the goal of, I guess, every songwriter.
Yeah. In 2015, I signed with Sony, and my calendar was like booked out 3 months in advance. So I knew like where I was going to be every day. you know, what publishing company, who I was writing with.
A publishing company would say, we need a song, so we need a songwriter.
Yeah.
And you would just be like a talent they would bring in, and they would say, today we're going to write a song about horses.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, okay.
I mean, it was on me. We have what's called a hook book, and it's an idea. Hook we write book. Down, ooh, I want to write a song.
So you have your own hook book.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I am taking note of all this because
look at me.
I'm exhausted. I have
three big plans in my life. Number one, to become a commercial fisherman. Number two, to be a stand-up comedian. Number three, to be a Nashville songwriter. Of all those things, I am closest to being a songwriter,
yeah.
Right, Andrew?
Well, absolutely. Technically, you're in.
Are you wanting to move to Nashville?
I mean, whatever it takes, I guess.
Okay.
Maybe now with the internet, you could be a Nashville songwriter and just stay at home.
Yeah, and stay in Nashville. Zoom in.
Did you notice that Misty said, are you wanting to move? Yeah, exactly.
I kind of like it right here where we're sitting.
Okay, so you have a hook book. So
correct.
You come to the table with some ideas, but how do they know what kind of songs you're wanting to write? Or how do you know what they want?
Well, it used to be in the 80s and 90s, two, three songwriters would get together and they would throw out ideas, you know, I've got this idea about a pickup truck. And then you throw out the ideas and then you go, oh no, that sucks. How about this? And you might be throwing out ideas for half a day in some cases. It depends who you're writing with. Nowadays, you're sitting down with an artist, and so maybe they're trying to put a certain topic on an album they're working on, or they're, oh, I need something up-tempo, or I need... So there's a little more unknown pressure. It used to be just go in and write the best song that's in the room that day. Now it's... I'm
very topical.
Yeah,
you're the target.
A target, exactly. So it's maybe a little less inspirational to start, but Rivers Rutherford, he always told me, don't write when you're inspired, write until you're inspired.
Oh,
that's cool.
So get in there, dig in, and you don't quit until you get a... So I...
Clay's going to be locking himself in the closet.
I'm okay. Taking notes.
Okay.
I'm taking notes over here.
Yeah.
That's
I mean,
good.
There's...
Thanks a lot, Andrew.
Yeah.
Get off my property.
Clay will be in the barn for the next 6 weeks.
I
want to
hear the backstory of Feed Jake. You know that dog, that song about the dog?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. From the, I think that was early 90s.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't that really sad?
It was so... Feed Jake, he's been a good dog.
He's been a good
my
dog.
Best friend right through it all. If I die before I wake, Feed Jake. I think about it every day whenever I'm out of town and I'm wondering if my chickens are going to be alive when I come home. It's kind of like reverse Feed Jake. But anyway, I'm curious how that one came about.
Hmm.
That's all I could think about when Andrew
Missy's
was talking.
Wanting to know if you can find
that out. I figured you
would
have liked that old Tom T. Hall song about who's going to feed them hogs. You ever heard that?
How's it go?
It's about, I'm trying to remember the way it goes, the verse. But he's so this guy is sick and he's laid up in the bed and in the hospital bed, and all he can talk about, Tom T says, all he can talk about is who's going to feed them hogs.
I understand.
It is great, man. It's a
Brent,
great song.
If you could sing, you would probably have like the ultimate just
hook
like
book.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
Are we assuming that Brent can't sing?
That's what I'm saying.
Brent can't sing.
Oh, I don't know. I don't believe it. I think Brent can.
Brent
sing.
Absolutely can sing.
Okay,
just
so,
not well.
So now you're living in Nashville.
Yeah.
Do you have to live in Nashville to be a songwriter?
You kind of do.
Okay.
Asking for a friend.
You kind of do. I tried for a while not to live there.
Okay.
But you can't avoid it. You got to be present to win.
Collaboration and creativity really flows when you're like eye to eye with people.
One of my first champions in that town, Alex Torres, he told me, I remember calling him up and I hadn't moved there yet. And I was really like, should I uproot my family and move down to Nashville? And I called him and I was like, hey, you know, should I do this? And he just deadpan, he was like, if you have to ask, the answer is no. You that only come here if you've got to come here.
Yeah.
And that hit me. I was like, pack the bags.
You needed Saddle some up. Conviction.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, so.
Is it true? Okay. Maybe I heard, I don't know where I heard this, but like when you go to Nashville and you go to a restaurant and someone waits on your table and they're like a 20-something person, there's a pretty good chance that they're in Nashville trying to make it in the music scene somewhere.
I would say that's very accurate.
I mean, it's like a mecca.
Like Hollywood.
For people to show up. And a lot of people, I mean, the vast majority of people would go there and have their dreams crushed.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Just by and large. They just wouldn't make it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it kind of makes it a, if you're like Chris Stapleton or whoever, it kind of makes it a pain to go out to eat. Because everybody's trying to sneak a CD into your sandwich or thumb drive, dropping a thumb drive.
Stapleton was that guy.
Absolutely.
That he was. It. Man, it's like the lottery. Like, you know, the lottery, absolutely.
Yeah.
They let some people win. And so it gives all the people that don't win inspiration that they're going to win the next time.
Yeah.
I don't know who's controlling this. But sounds like a rigged system.
The best analysis is kind of like baseball, and there's like the minor leagues is like most of the songwriters, and then this, and then somebody gets called up, you know. And
is it always the best guy?
No,
for real.
Yeah, I mean, there's
just like this is like a coon hunt.
There's tons of ridiculously talented people out there who will never be found.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well,
how's it like a coon hunt, Brent?
The best dog don't always win. Mm-hmm. It's the guy that knows the rules.
Mm, or gets lucky.
Our good friend Willie didn't win. Willie Nelson couldn't make it in Nashville.
Yeah.
Yep.
He had to go back home.
He went down to Texas and became Willie Nelson.
He
it's
did.
True.
Yeah.
He wrote crazy. He wrote crazy like a mile from my house in a building that's not even there anymore in Goodlettsville. And he gave up and headed down there and became...
Yeah.
Willie.
He did all right.
The redheaded stranger.
So, I won't put these words in your mouth, but you were like, I write songs every single day.
Right.
Is that true?
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, you just like...
Like, you just crank them out. Are you talking about lyrics and music?
Oh, yeah.
Which comes first?
It depends on the day.
Really?
For me, the lyrics are the most important part. Especially being in Nashville, it's a song town. And so, historically,
anyway. Wait a minute. What's the other kind of town?
Well, that's more of a... Like, to me, L.A. is more of a beat town. Like, it's...
They Where come would up with, I do best?
Nashville's your place.
Arkansas. Okay. Okay.
you never struggle with words, so... Nashville's your town.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, it's... To me, lyrics are usually first, because it's the idea. But every once in a while, somebody comes in with a cool lick, and you're like, ooh, let's write something of that. So sometimes it's the other way. But
Montana Knife Company was founded by Josh Smith, one of the world's most experienced master bladesmiths. He's been making knives for 30 years, made in the USA and manufactured locally in Montana. The knives come with a multi-generational warranty and free sharpening. Designed, tested, and built by hunters, MKC is a hunting knife company first and foremost. They have the sharpest knives out of the box and the easiest knives to sharpen. And that is the dadgum truth. You better be careful with them when you get them. They are sharp. MKC is a fast-growing company. They just hired their 55th employee and are looking to hire about 50 more in the next year or so. I've carried a lot of these Montana knives. And the one that I like the most is their Speed Goat, which is a lightweight hunting knife, just the right size. MKC knives sell out within minutes of being released. So head over to MontanaKnifeCompany.com. They have new knives for sale every Thursday at 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. So check their website and sign up for their text and email alerts. That is the best way to find out when they have knives available. Use code BEARGREASE10 for 10% off your first order. Montana Knife Company, working knives for working people.
O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. If you're confused about what part you need, like what wipers are going to be the best, what replacement headlights are going to be the best, go into O'Reilly and talk to the people that work there because they're great and they're super friendly and they'll get you squared away where you walk out knowing you got the right thing. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. Do you need your windshield wipers replaced? You need a brake light fixed? You need some quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at OReillyAuto.com/meateater. That's OReillyAuto.com/meateater. Pay attention here because this is a hell of a good service. It's called the Wellness Company. Picture this, okay? You wake up, you got a scratchy throat, you're all congested, you got a runny nose, you got a cough, whatever. And you weigh your options like you tough it out, get sick, take time off work, try to get a doctor's appointment sometime in the next few months, wait 2 hours at urgent care and sit in a room full of six sick folks, or you open your medical emergency kit. You match your symptoms to the doctor recommended prescription and you start on the right meds right away. These medical emergency kits, not a first aid kit, all right? It comes with doctor prescribed meds to treat over 39 medical issues. So, on hand, strong antibiotics for infections of all types. Plus, a doctor's easy guide so you know exactly what to take and when. No waiting to see the doctor, no waiting at the pharmacy. It's all in there. Every home should have at least one medical emergency kit. Order yours online in minutes. Your kit will be rushed to your door. Get 15% off at twc.health/meateater, but you got to use the promo code meateater. That's promo code meateater, okay, at twc.health/meateater.
I'll tell you what gets me about lyrics. Mm-hmm. You can't speak Spanish by any chance, can you?
No, I can't.
Dadgummit. Listen to songs in English rhyme. Versus they rhyme. Listen to a song in Spanish. I can't find two words in there that sound alike. Like when you get to the end of a beat, when it's supposed to rhyme with the sentence before, I can't find anything.
Have you explored this a lot?
I have asked everybody I know.
Hold on, if I'm Spanish just thinking, songs rhyme?
Let's just go Selena's Bitty Bitty Bum Bum.
I don't know about that at all.
It's the way...
Para bailar la bamba.
Cada vez, ba, boom, boom, boom.
We may have gotten off track here.
How many songwriters do we get in here? We've had.
You have one in your presence all the time.
Okay, how many real songwriters do we have?
Five original songs. Some that you've
all
never heard.
Of something.
Well, yeah. Hey, I mean, everybody's got to have a
Have you made hundreds of dollars?
It's like a form letter. The ballad of fill in the blank.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, Josh, well, and that's okay.
I need except to know about this.
It works.
How many songs have you written that are start off with the ballad of?
The ballad of what?
How many songs do you think you've written, Andrew?
Definitely over 1,000. Probably.
Wow.
Oh, Lord.
Probably
1,400.
If you write every day, you're writing a song every day?
Yeah.
All right.
Do you have like a goal, like I'm going to complete a song today?
I almost always, like, I usually get 5 songs a week. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That's now, are you impressive. Under contract with somebody to do that?
Yeah, I have been. I've written for 3 different companies, and it's funny because the contract says you need to turn in 1,200% or songs or 36% you know, songs per year. But if you're only doing that, you're not in the game. So
really,
everybody's just writing 4 or 5 days a week, cranking them out.
Wow. And So you write a bunch of songs that never see the light of day anywhere.
Absolutely.
So it's just, they're you just should, trying to funnel through as much, and they'll one will ping with an artist.
Right.
So you're writing songs for some of these country artists that are trying to make it into the mainstream, which, like, I mean, I'm speculating here, but you're not necessarily you're not trying to be like a country music star.
I'm not.
You would be if they asked you, but that's not like the goal.
Yeah, that's not the goal.
You're a songwriter.
Yeah, that's what I'm passionate about, is the writing. And
so a home run for you would be for a Luke Combs or somebody to somehow hear one of your songs and be like, I want to record that.
Absolutely.
And that would be like massive.
That might actually be like a World Series.
That would be the World Series.
Yeah. 100%. Luke Combs. I mean, that would be the World Series, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. I was telling somebody the other day, say you write 1,000 songs, 5 songs will make you 99% of your money you make in your whole career. Like,
wow.
It's
like gold mining.
Yeah, it is kind
of so
prospecting.
Is it the law of averages? Like, if I write enough songs, surely one of them's going to be a hit.
Yeah. And that the funny thing is, just because those other 995, let's make sure I'm doing my math right, songs, that doesn't mean they're not hits. That's what's funny.
They just didn't get the shot.
Yeah, or they haven't got. There's just a lot of songs in that town. And then there's back catalog. I mean, for goodness sakes, if you're like, say, Jason Aldean and you're looking for songs, yeah, you're looking at new stuff, but what if there's like this old Waylon song that was never cut?
Oh, yeah.
Well, that would be pretty cool. So there's literally decades of back catalog in that town that are amazing. Tom T. Hall songs or Don Williams. It's amazing.
That's crazy. Who has access to the hook book? I'd kind of like to hear about the other side of it. So you're supplying. Where does the demand come from?
Well, the artist. So who, like, say it's like Monday and I look at my calendar and it's like, all right, I am writing with this artist. Say I'm like my buddy Tristan Merez, who's a Texas country artist. And I'm like, okay, he usually writes this kind of stuff. So I'll be thinking, oh, what's a good idea for Tristan? Because I have him coming up on my books next week. So then we'll go in and I'll throw out some ideas and he might have one. The dream is for the artist to walk in with an idea because you know they're already into it.
Right.
Mm.
So as a songwriter, you're like, please let them be excited about something. So because now otherwise I got to sell an idea that I have.
Yeah.
And just hope it connects with them. So,
Well, I want to hear you play the Ballad of Warner Glenn.
Yeah, man.
So this song, we didn't really finish our full introduction, but Andrew wrote me about this Hawk and Horse album that was coming out about the frontiersmen, the West, the fur trappers. Yeah. And he seemed like a cool guy. And that's right when I had this Ballad of Warner Glenn, like mostly finished, but I said, hey, would you take this song and do whatever you want to it, but record it for me professionally?
Yeah.
And he was like, absolutely. And it just felt like it was right up his alley to do it. And and he helped me become a registered songwriter. With what organization?
You're with ASCAP, right?
ASCAP.
Yeah.
Yep. It's official. All right, so for people who haven't, maybe hadn't been following along, we did a big series on Warner Glenn. Warner Glenn is now 87 years old. He lives in Southeast Arizona. We did a video project with Warner. He's an incredible man, and I've spent some time with him on a couple different trips, and came back from Southeast Arizona and was inspired to write a ballad about Warner Glenn, and then turn it over to Andrew. And he helped me with some of the lyrics and the chorus mainly, and put some magic on it. So sing it for us, man.
Yeah, I didn't have to change too much. The lyrics were pretty fantastic.
Yeah, they were pretty fantastic.
Oh boy,
Andrew said.
You should see him drive a bulldozer.
Way down south on the border of Mexico, with rattlesnakes, cactus, and banditos. Dirt and spurs, feed the hounds and let them go. As a boy, Marvin taught him where the big toms rove. An open country where the jaguars roam. Open country full of a different kind of gold. A 16-hand mule saddled up before the sun glows. Nobody told him this wretched life is a hard road to hoe. Hiding the rising sun behind the Chiricahua's folds. He's mounted and moving for an all-day mule back stroll. An open country where the jaguars roam. Open country full of a different kind of gold. On a lion track in the dirt, 7 miles in, but where'd he go? Got a pack of white walkers that are philosophers like Thoreau. Working across the dirt like a farmer works his rows. Up the canyon, round the rock, chasing the ghost of a shadow. Through open country where the jaguars roam. Open country full of a different kind of gold. Open country will be lost if no one knows. But this wild country's where the jaguar roams. They'll only catch him if he crosses the plateau. Chase him over the rim rocks and old hook, bathes him in a hole. It's no lion he seeks, but a wildness he can't control. Who I'm talking about is Warner Glenn and his Mumo Chomo.
Excellent. Right.
Excellent.
Very good. Oh, man. It was
that,
awesome in
that,
person.
That is cool, man.
Yeah.
How did that feel to hear, just watch him do that song?
That's, with that's really cool.
Yeah.
Really cool. Man, that sounds good.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Yeah, that, that was really good.
Yeah. Yeah, so that song, if somebody didn't have any context, it possibly could be confusing. Warner Glenn is a mountain lion, dry ground mountain lion hunter, and that's why if you know about Warner Glenn, this song makes a lot of sense. Marvin is his dad, who's long passed away, but Marvin taught him where the big toms rove. That's in the beginning. Mm-hmm. He lives in the Chiricahua Mountains. Warner Glenn owns, I'm pretty sure, 17 mules, and hardly one of them is under 16 hands tall, which is really tall for a mule. Warner Glenn's 6'6". He needs a big mule.
Big guy.
He runs a pack of mixed walker dogs. Mm. And my favorite line in there is he's got a pack of white walkers that are philosophers like Thoreau. Mm-hmm. Because these dogs are at the pinnacle of the hound hunting world for their ability to trail game, because it's the toughest conditions there is for trailing game, which is dry and hot. Arid. And so they're chasing the ghost of a shadow, which is cool. And then the chorus talks about jaguars, though. And that part of the world is the only place in America where the range of the jaguar goes into America. Mm. And if you watched our film on the Meteor YouTube channel, you would see that Warner Glenn was the first person to ever document a live jaguar in America. His dogs, and I believe it was 1996, and then he did it again in the 2000s. He was lion hunting for mountain lions, which there are a lot of mountain lions out there, and his dogs bayed what he thought was a mountain lion. and he goes into the dogs, and it's a jaguar. And he has his camera with him, and he takes a photograph, and it's the first photograph ever of a jaguar, not dead. Now, there's a bunch of old photos of dead jaguars. The first time they're like, yep, there's a live jaguar. And it was before trail cameras were real prominent and such. And yeah, there's a painting right there. You can buy that painting. I'm pretty sure the last name of that painter is McWilliams. But this I've got the jaguar that...
DeLoss. That's what it says on the paint.
Not McWilliams.
Yeah.
DeLoss. And you can buy similar. That.
That's the guy you bought the paint from.
Yeah, McWilliams paint. Yeah, down in Southeast Arizona. but so when you're in that country, though, it's like jaguar country, and that's kind of the lore. And Warner Glenn's 87, and he's seen two. You know, and most people have lived there their whole lives and seen zero. His dad always wanted to see a jaguar and never did. His dad Marvin never caught a jaguar.
I didn't know that.
Oh yeah, it's incredibly rare. And so that's why the chorus talks about jaguars, but the main thing is they're lion hunting. And then he had a mule. I had to pick a mule name because he in his book, Warner Glenn has a book, and in his book he was given a mule named Mochomo from a rich, wealthy Mexican rancher who he and his dad went down into Mexico to catch lions off this ranch. That were catching cattle and horse colts and stuff. And the man liked Warner so much that he gave him his finest. Well, as the story went, I'm pretty sure this wealthy rancher said, "Warner, you can have any one of my horses that you want." Some version of he offered him a horse, and Warner said, "You know what? I really don't want that any of your horses, but I'd like that mule Mochomo." And so the rancher was like, "Really? You want the mule?"
He's like, "Have at it, bud."
And so Warner took Mochomo, and he became this like incredible mule. And so that's why I love Warner Glenn. He chose the mule
over the horse.
Mm-hmm.
How about banjo?
What's that?
How about banjo?
Oh, dude.
Oh boy.
Did it work? Let's not even go there.
Okay.
It's not time to release the information.
I'm just waiting.
But let me tell you this. I've been riding banjo all over these mountains for the last week.
It's true.
Damn. Got any offers of 10 grand?
Oh, next year, should I be desirous of selling him, he'll be worth 10 grand.
Excellent.
Wow.
I'll trade you my pickup.
He's a fantastic mule. He's beautiful, and he's doing very good. Awesome. I might even like him better than Izzy.
What? Wow. Hey, come on now.
She's out there. She can hear you say that.
Yeah. She's kind of a piece of work.
She is a piece
but,
of work.
But anyway.
She's a pain.
That was cool, Andrew. So where can people find that song?
You can find it anywhere you stream music.
Spotify.
Download Spotify, Apple Music.
Amazon.
Add it to your playlist.
Yeah.
Guess who gets the money? Me and Andrew.
There you go.
All right. Maybe.
We may make
hundreds of dollars. Maybe tens
if we make
of dollars.
Hundreds of dollars, I will quit meat eating and move to Nashville.
Everybody at Meat Eater now, download the music. Download it.
I listen to that song all the time, and I've not seen a paycheck yet. So tell me, not by choice either. Clay loves that song. He loves listening to it in the car.
It's the only song he's got on his playlist.
Yeah. I can
he's got
tell
on repeat.
When Clay's messed with my playlist, because that comes on first, it's like, all right, that's enough.
Well, no, for real, you need to go check out Hawk and Horse.
Yes.
Hawk and Horse, you have a lot of songs. My favorite one is Jeremiah Johnson, I think.
Oh, yeah. Thanks. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I love that song, too.
I could watch that movie every day. And I've listened to that song a bunch of times. It's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What?
I've never seen it.
You've never seen Jeremiah Johnson?
Really?
Wow. Oh, yeah. Wow. Some things you just don't tell,
that's
brother.
That's sad. Yeah.
I know.
Should have kept that
I need
to yourself.
To see it.
Well, that's incredible. Well, hey. The reason
before we get into it, can he tell us about this rifle?
Yeah, quickly because we've got a lot to do here.
There's a lot going on today.
Beautiful rifle.
Yeah, tell us about the rifle.
Well, this is a 45 caliber Kibler Woods Runner, and it's their Jim Kibler is a gun builder out of Ohio, and he makes these CNC rifle kits, and they go together like Legos. I mean, this is the, I'm not some amazing woodworker. I just put this together, but anyway, this is my new baby, and I planning on taking a deer with it this year.
It's a true flintlock.
Yeah, it's a flintlock.
It actually has a rock, a piece of flint that makes the spark that ignites the powder.
Yep, black powder only.
Wow.
And it's a. Would you describe that as a Kentucky long rifle style gun?
Absolutely. Yeah. This is called a woods runner, so it's a little more nimble for running through the woods.
Yeah, and, it's a beautiful gun.
But yeah, it's a Pennsylvania, Kentucky long rifle, either one of those names. Yeah.
Okay. Well, no, so on Instagram, Andrew is Hawk and Horse, and he posts, it's kind of like an educational, in a way, channel about the frontier. Like, he posts a lot of art and a lot of pictures, and he'll have information about, I mean, like, I learned stuff following
it's good stuff.
Hawk and Horse on Instagram. A lot. That's why he's kind of big into the flintlock and all this stuff.
It's actually Hawk and Horse Band.
That's correct.
Just in case someone Hawk wants to follow Band. Hawk and Horse Band.
Gotcha. Yeah.
No dots, Instagram. No underscores. Just
yeah, check it out. Check it out.
Which of you listening right now took a class in school about Family Finances 101? No one? Yeah, me neither. Like the importance of a will or college savings plan or even life insurance or estate planning. We have to know these things. But how do we figure it all out? That's why I'm excited to partner with Fabric by Gerber Life. Life insurance is important to me. It just gives me security in knowing that if anything happened to me, my family would remain financially stable in my absence. Fabric by Gerber Life is term life insurance you can get done right here, right now. You can be covered from your couch in under 10 minutes with no health exam required. Join the thousands of parents who trust Fabric to protect their family. Apply today in just minutes at meetfabric.com/bear. That's meetfabric.com/bear. MEET, fabric.com/bear. Policies issued by Western Southern Life Assurance Company. Not available in certain states. Prices subject to underwriting and health questions. Montana Knife Company was founded by Josh Smith, one of the world's most experienced master bladesmiths. He's been making knives for 30 years. Made in the USA and manufactured locally in Montana. The knives come with a multi-generational warranty and free sharpening. Designed, tested, and built by hunters, MKC is a hunting knife company first and foremost. They have the sharpest knives out of the box and the easiest knives to sharpen. And that is the dadgum truth. You better be careful with them when you get them. They are sharp. MKC is a fast-growing company. They just hired their 55th employee and are looking to hire about 50 more in the next year or so. I've carried a lot of these Montana knives. And the one that I like the most is their Speed Goat, which is a lightweight hunting knife, just the right size. MKC knives sell out within minutes of being released. So head over to MontanaKnifeCompany.com. They have new knives for sale every Thursday at 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. So check their website and sign up for their text and email alerts. That is the best way to find out when they have knives available. Use code BEARGREASE10 for 10% off your first order. Montana Knife Company, working knives for working people.
O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. If you're confused about what part you need, like what wipers are going to be the best, what replacement headlights are going to be the best, go into O'Reilly and talk to the people that work there because they're great and they're super friendly and they'll get you squared away where you walk out knowing you got the right thing. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. Do you need your windshield wipers replaced? You need a brake light fixed? You need some quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/meateater. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/meateater.
So the reason I wanted to have Andrew here today was because we were talking about Davy Crockett. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And if you're new to the podcast on The Render, we talk about what happened the week before on the actual Bear Grease podcast. And guys, guess what? You're all in trouble because we have another quiz.
Ding, 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 ding.
I knew it. I heard it.
We have another quiz.
See if big I win time two quiz. In a row.
The last quiz seemed to do. I felt like that it helped me
brought some energy.
Gain control of my podcast again because I then know if you guys are paying attention. Because sometimes I'm like, how was the podcast last week? And y'all are like, oh, it was great. And I'm like, what was it about? Pop quiz.
Here's what happened on the way home from fishing today. Me and Josh had you on at, what was that?
1.75?
1.25. Oh, yeah.
Oh, y'all were studying.
You were spitting out some info, Jack. It was like like drinking from a fire hose from my ear.
Okay, here we go. The first person to answer.
Just blurt it out.
Blurt it out. Even you can even cut the question in half.
Oh,
each correct answer gets a point. Incorrect answers are minus 0.5.
Oh,
I like it. Incorrect answers are
whoever
minus
wins gets that rifle.
0.5. And whoever wins gets the rifle.
Bam.
And his guitar.
I'm gonna shoot a hole in that guitar with it.
All right, here we go. Question number one. How quickly did Crockett marry
3 months.
Elizabeth
under three
after
months, yeah.
Polly, his first wife?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 3 months goes to Josh Lambert,
wow.
Spillmaker.
Booyah,
man.
I feel like this quiz
that's where we cut it
disproportionately
off.
Favors the impulsive.
Well,
you're too nice.
I cannot deny it.
The impulsive are going to get minus points if they get it wrong.
Wasn't that one of the Beatitudes? Blessed are the impulsive. Yeah. We'll win the quizzes.
I don't think that was on there, Josh.
I don't remember that one.
I think you're reading
that's from the book
else.
Of Josh.
That was a okay. So that was the way the podcast started off, was talking about his wife dying.
Yeah, boy, that was
and
sad.
It was sad.
It was. And then he, within 3 months, married. We don't know the exact date that Polly died. I don't think that's like in the record. Well, it wasn't in the books that I read. It probably is on a headstone somewhere. We don't know exactly when she died, the day she died. But we do know that he got married on
December,
March 15th.
What was December the 14th? What was that?
Could be a question on the quiz.
Well, that's my answer right now.
There's nothing happened on December 14th of note in the last 200 years. but it was very pragmatic. And that's where we went. And that's when Robert Morgan brought up this idea of pragmatism being a value
June
of the American front.
June what? The 11th, 1815, Polly died.
Negative.
That's what it says.
Okay, well, then Crockett married Elizabeth 2 months before that. We've got a major scandal.
Uh-oh.
Bum, bum, bum.
I still get my point.
You still get your point. We're going to have to get to the bottom of this. Let's not do that now.
We're going to have another episode now, folks.
Yeah, yeah. But pragmatism. Misty, you were going to say something about pragmatism.
I want to say something.
Okay.
Go ahead. Misty,
go ahead.
Let Misty talk.
No, it's all right. You go ahead. I'm trying to remember what I was going to say about pragmatism.
Well, I'll tell you what I was going to say about it because I want to say something about it too. I counted 8 times it was used in one paragraph. Pragmatism, pragmatic. It's very pragmatic.
Pragmatic.
It was used 8 times. I counted them while we was driving down the road. I was hoping that was going to be a test question. But that's all I had to say about it.
That's all. So you didn't
used
have,
it 8
well,
times.
Well, I thought it was good that it was. It came up over and over.
It did. It
came up over and over. Okay. Question.
Well, that's
why
them folks were living, man.
But.
It had to be that way.
But what I thought, you know, Robert Morgan was talking about how there was a lot of idealism, though, in the South. That,
right.
And that, and I'm trying to remember, was he saying idealism was an American? It is, because you said it's uniquely
not
American,
idealism.
And he said it's not unique, but it is American.
Right. Well, he, But then he contrasted the North and the South and the Civil War.
And he talked
War.
About, yeah, and the Civil War.
And he talked about how the South was that was part of the reason some believe they lost the war, was they were more idealistic, less pragmatic.
Mm-hmm.
And so the South would have been kind of excluded from the mm-hmm. pragmatic American thinking that was what he was saying.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I like that quote he said when you guys were talking. Robert Morgan said something to the effect of nothing is the end of the world in America.
That's I actually have that quote written.
Yeah, there. That hit home. I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the American way right there.
Yeah. And the idea that the actual geographic size of America gave us so much opportunity, mm-hmm. and then that became part of the national character, was opportunity. Mm-hmm. And it all goes back to land. Which, well, in human history, it almost always goes back to land. And like, who's got the land?
Yeah.
And do you own it? That's like the story. I mean, even all the way back to the Garden of Eden and Adam and Eve, the land and the people. And in America, coming from this really overcrowded Europe that was settled from shore to shore for the most part, mm-hmm. they came to this huge place which in the American ideal was a wilderness. But my friend Taylor Keene, a couple years ago, mm-hmm. he was the first one I remember saying it to me. He said, the idea that America was a wilderness is a farce.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't. It was a robust civilization. Mm-hmm. But to the European, it looked like wilderness. To the Native Americans, it looked like a great civilization.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's a whole other story. But basically, we came in and had all this room to grow, room to mess up, room to become wealthy. And so, I mean, it's really a part of the American story is the land, which is wild. And the more I dig into American history, the more I realize how wild it is that there's not like five countries inside of what is now the continental U.S. It totally would have made sense. I mean, that's what the South tried to do with the Civil War, was to make their own country.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a wonder there wasn't, you know, a Spanish. I mean, it was so broken up. So many people had stakes in it. And the fact that it became from Atlantic to Pacific, the same nation, is wild.
Well, it is one big hunk of ground. It is three countries, Mexico and United States and Canada.
And that's why I said, you know, what is now the continental U.S. Right.
It is part of the challenge that I think America's facing right now is all of these, you know, that it's not just geographic spread, but the diversity of ideas and the diversity of, and one of the challenges that we give our students every year in one of our classes is to, you know, think about the U.S. in terms of different countries and how would you put it together? And some people do it just by geography, but a lot of the students say, well, it's more about ideals, and they try to group people by ideals. And our school has a hybrid bent to it. And so kids are actually coming from all over the U.S. And there was a big famous article about 10 years ago, the Nine Nations of North America. And it's challenging because it's not geographically split. It's really more split off of a set of ideals.
Yeah. Interesting. Very interesting. Okay. Question number two. What topic did host Clay Newcomb ask the Render members to ask
Alabama
him
and
about?
How he almost died in Alabama.
Near death in Alabama.
The point goes to Andrew Wills.
That was good.
Yes. Okay, so there's only so much you can talk about. Crockett goes down to Alabama. He's married to Elizabeth. He goes down to Alabama, and he gets incredibly sick. He's traveling with two guys, just Tennesseans. And he gets so sick, probably malaria, and they think he's dead. And now the it would be interesting to get the real story of, like, how do you think a guy is dead to the point that he's alive when you leave him,
right.
that you're leaving him. I mean, it's almost like two of some of your best friends going fishing without you and not even telling you that they went. But no, it's, so
especially when your life goal is to be a commercial fisherman.
Exactly. If you're a commercial fisherman, you ain't fly fishing.
That's true.
So these guys that are like his neighbors and such take his horse back to Elizabeth and is like, Crockett's dead.
Sorry. It's over.
And I don't think it was scandalous. There was no talk of like they were shysters because they took his horse back to his wife.
They thought he was dead, yeah.
Right.
And so I don't know what circumstances drove them to not nurse him or take him. We don't really know because he just talks about it in his autobiography. And so takes the horse back to the wife and says, he gone. And she goes, I don't think he's dead. And perhaps they told her, we think he's dead. Like, when we left him, he was really sick.
Pretty certain.
And basically, he tries to walk home, and he's on the side of the road in Alabama, and two Indians come by. And they take him.
When
to
he's
the
sick?
Near, he's dying.
Okay. It's Fess Parker.
After these guys left him, and they take him to the nearest home of a white person, and just this random house, and these Native Americans drop Crockett off, and they say, here's a dude.
Somebody broke you, white man.
Yeah, yeah.
Good, okay.
Good Samaritan.
I think we need to come up with a pact here, guys. If you are ever out in the hunting woods with Clay, leave the mule.
Ah, he's gone.
Bring him back, all right? Dead or alive. We'd like to go ahead and have that body back just so that we can
if it's Banjo
double
or
check,
Izzy.
Confirm, especially if there's any sense of uncertainty about it. Okay. Let's just go out and bring him back.
Okay. Is he breathing? I don't know.
So Crockett.
Grab the horse.
Crockett goes into this house and they give him... They have some kind of bottle of medicine, and there's a name
elixir.
For it.
Some Imbra? Kind of an elixir.
Some incredibly powerful elixir, yeah. And they give him, like, the whole bottle, and he's supposed to just take a little bit of it. And he stays unconscious for 5 days.
Oh, my Lord.
Man, let me
laudanum.
Tell you.
He's unconscious for laudanum. 5 days. Laudanum.
Was it laudanum?
Yeah.
It's got opium in it.
Got opium in it,
that's
yeah.
it.
Yeah. It's like...
And,
oh, wow. Yeah, it's like taking some... Some hydrocodone.
That's exactly what it was. And then, and he's unconscious for 5 days. And then finally, like, comes awake, stays with him for 2 weeks, and then goes back to Elizabeth. And she had already sent a guy out to go check on him. So when he's coming back, the guy's going out. And she's like, you're alive! But I thought it was interesting talking about how common that was back in those days. For people to just think...
Leave the human, bring the horse home?
Yeah, just for people to think someone was dead. Because there was just no communication. And it was just so common for people to die. And so, I mean, that happened so many times. It happened with Boone, and it happened all over. And the idea that thinking someone's dead, and them not being dead, and showing back up, can you think of a scenario with the possibility for a more strong human response.
Right.
Yeah.
To just, I mean, like somebody could die and you get like an emotional response of, oh, he's dead. Someone could get lost. You know, they're alive, but they're found. It's like, well, we never thought he was dead. He was just gone for a while. Somebody dies. It's like, game over.
It's the lowest of lows to the highest of highs, like that.
And then they come back.
Yeah, you could probably write a song about that, Andy.
Yeah, probably.
You should.
I'm already thinking about it.
It's in the hook book.
He's scribbling something on his palm right now. Yeah.
But then, and then even taking that back to the pinnacle of the Christian faith, which is Jesus died.
Right.
3 days later, came back.
But he legit died.
He did. He did. Yeah. It wasn't fake.
Right.
And so... That's just interesting. It was interesting to me. So thank you for reminding me. That was Andrew. Thank you for reminding me. The score is 1. Andrew 1. Josh Spillmaker 1.
Stop pointing at him.
Brent 0. Misty 0.
I would like to get a half a point because Andrew said Alabama, but I said near death experience in Alabama. And
no,
I screamed.
He said it quicker. Misty, okay, we're moving on.
Three.
Question number 3. In Crockett's first term in office, What nickname did he pick up that he used for the rest of his life?
Man from the Cane
Gentleman from the Cane. Oh.
Gentleman from the
Bam!
Cane.
Bam! Goes to Misty
Nuka. Oh. I don't even remember that.
Nailed it. You picked it right. You picked his pocket.
I picked his pocket.
Gentleman from the Cane.
I'm over here like the dude from the Cane.
Gentleman from the Cane.
That's it.
So that was a...
Misty's on the books, y'all.
Andrew won. Misty won. Josh won. Brent zero.
Misty won.
That was a... I thought that was a cool story.
Yeah.
And it was the it was early in his life. He was young. It was his first time in public office. This guy really literally came off the American frontier, all of a sudden is put in this place of proper men inside of a political system that still, even though it's on the American frontier, is quite aristocratic. I mean, we like to think, and this is where Crockett's influence in America is seen so strong, is that all these Europeans came from Europe. And I mean, what do you think when you see a picture of George Washington and Benjamin Franklin? They look like Europeans.
I mean,
they're wearing the European clothes. They got the European hairstyles. They were breaking away from that, and their ideals were very different.
Right.
But still, there was a big tinge of kind of this aristocracy and the rich folks lead. And there was the common man that would never have the ability to like make this jump. And if you weren't a landowner, you didn't have any power. And so Crockett coming from the frontier, and remember, he's the first one really. And he's standing up before the Tennessee state legislature. And this old guy who we don't even know his name anymore, he is enforcing, reinforcing to the world that this commoner shouldn't be here. So I mean, it's really showing the ideals of Europe.
Yep.
And he says the gentleman from the Cane, totally belittling him. The Cane, it would be like saying the Hicks from the Sticks.
Yeah. Right.
These guys. Crockett comes back the next day, wearing as a joke a ruff. And stands up and introduces himself as the gentleman from the Cane, charms the whole place, makes this guy look like an idiot, and for the rest of his life, he called himself the gentleman from the Cane. Now that he was playing chess, well, them boys was playing checkers. Yeah,
that was a good analogy.
Yeah, I thought that was cool. Whew. Okay, final question.
It's a tie.
It's a tie.
It's a three-parter.
What words did David Crockett have his portrait artist, John Gatsby Chadman,
go ahead.
Paint?
Go ahead.
Bam!
Oh,
paint
on
the stock of his gun. Andrew Wilt comes in with a steal. You, sir, win a Kentucky Long Rifle.
And a guitar.
I was nervous.
Andrew was looking hard to bring those things back home.
So now Andrew can make a living and feed his family.
Yes. I'm relieved. I just got that.
Go ahead. So that was
excellent.
Yeah, that was Crockett's that was his just what he said, and he wanted that written on his gun. What did y'all think about I had somebody communicate with me that they didn't understand what Crockett's blunder was. They thought that I was saying that Crockett's blunder was him opposing the Indian Removal Act.
No.
I felt like I made it clear.
You actually said that was Crockett's blunder. Crockett's blunder was. Because I thought you did make it clear, and you actually restated it. It was him
going on the book
kind
tour.
Kind of forsaking his duties as a congressman and instead going on a book tour to pursue
maybe
fame.
That guy didn't finish the podcast.
Because
it was clear that the Indian Removal Act, the opposition to that hurt him politically.
Yeah.
Right.
But that I think was his most noble, one of his most noble moments, which was at the time would have been like pretty highly progressive. That's probably the wrong word to use. Today you hear progressive and it brings political connotation. I just mean he was ahead of his time.
But it really was like a civil rights move.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It would have been. And I learned this today that there were some Native American chiefs that were communicating with him, like thanking him for opposing it.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Wow. So he actually did have some connection to that community, you know.
Hmm.
But But yeah, that was pretty big.
So one of my favorite parts, just not anything really deep, but we got a really good chuckle out of him when he's on the campaign tour, getting up going first and reciting his opponent's complete campaign speech. Can you imagine?
Jeff and I did too.
I mean, that was genius, absolute genius.
Yes.
I was actually driving a bunch of boys to basketball practice, and we were listening to this, and they thought that whole section, him knocking on the door with a wooden broom.
Yeah.
I mean, they
laughed. Now, Miss Newcomb, I would have thought you would have thought that was inappropriate.
I did think it was inappropriate, but he didn't do anything. I mean, he didn't.
You thought it was funny, didn't you?
I think it's the first.
I just think he's a character.
It's the first farmer daughter joke in history.
he wrote it.
He did. Dude was a comedian.
Yeah. Oh, he was. That's it. I mean, he was full of. He was full of
it.
Full of it.
Yes. Yeah. It. Absolutely. He was full of it.
Yeah, and then he was just it became so common in America for us to have like this folksy backwoods talk. Uh-huh. Well, he was the first one to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, and then you see that when Robert Morgan talked about his influence on Lincoln.
Yeah, that's what I was going to bring up. Yeah.
That was pretty major. And I wouldn't have necessarily made that connection.
When he started laying out the connections, I was like, oh, yeah, I can see it real clearly.
Well, it was not a template for a commoner backwoodsman to be able to step on the political stage.
Yeah.
And Lincoln, you know, Crockett dies in 1836, and then Lincoln is, you know, obviously president in the 1860s, and he's an older man when he's president. So their lives, I don't know when
would have overlapped.
They would have overlapped. So I'm not sure when Lincoln was born, but you see a generation of influence. It's like all of a sudden there was a space.
Yeah.
And that's the way society and culture works, is that someone pioneers a space, like a cultural space for somebody to do something. It's like, oh, I didn't know that I could be a politician. Oh, I didn't know that this kind of talk and connecting to society worked. And so that's how Lincoln stood out, was that he was from the frontier and he stood out. And so anyway,
1809, LaRue County, Kentucky.
So oh, wow. He was born in 1809. So they overlapped
a lot. That
was when
Lincoln was born. Mm-hmm.
That's great. Andrew, why don't you close us down by playing the Ballad of Davy Crockett?
Love it. Okay.
Of course, I'm going to sing.
Do you need to know that you've got perfect pitch?
That was a mosquito. Or tendonitis. Tetanus. Which one is it in your ear?
Tinnitus.
Yeah. One of them.
Tinnitus is usually an injury associated with tennis.
With tennis. Oh, no, it's from fly fishing.
All right.
Here we go.
Born on a mountaintop of Tennessee.
Yeah.
Greenest state in the land of the free. Raised in the woods so he knew every tree. Killed him a bar when he was only three.
Everybody.
Davy Crockett, king of the wild frontier. Fought single-handed through the Indian War, till the Creeks was whipped and peace was in store. While he was handling this risky chore, he made himself a legend forevermore. Davy Crockett, king of the wild frontier. He went off to Congress and served a spell, fixing up the government, the laws as well. He took over Washington, so I hear tell. He patched up the crack in the Liberty Bell. Davy Crockett, king of the wild frontier. When he come home, his politicking's done. Why, the Western March had just begun. So he packed his gear and his trusty gun.
Betsy.
He lit out a grin in the fall of the sun. Davy Crockett, king of the wild frontier. All right, here's the last one.
Here we go.
He heard of Houston and Austin, and so to the Texas Plains he had to go.
The freedom was fighting another foe, and they needed him at the Alamo. Davy, Davy Crockett, king of the wild frontier.
That's some foreshadowing.
If that would have been in Spanish, would none of that rhyme?
See.
Thanks a ton, Andrew. Thanks for coming, man.
Thanks
Enjoy
for having
your new rifle.
Yeah, oh, I'm excited to shoot that rifle.
Big win for you.
It's going
to
be like...
And I hate to move in on your scene there in Nashville and start writing songs, but, you know.
A man's got to do what a man's got to do.
Come on down and make hundreds of dollars.
Today I make hundreds of dollars writing songs. Yes.
I'm out of here.
Excellent. Well, we have one more episode of Crockett.
I'm excited.
And it's almost like its own thing. It could stand alone.
It could stand
100%.
Alone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Mm. All right. Excellent. Thank you all. Thank you all so much.
Everybody listen to This Country Life, and thank you for the folks that are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This Country Life.
Yeah,
with
man.
Brent Reeves. It's going well.
See you Friday. Every Friday morning.
Every Friday morning. Excellent.
Hey, everybody knows Weber Grills. I've been using Weber Grills my whole life, and check it out. They got a pellet grill, the Weber Searwood Pellet Grill. Now, with a pellet grill, you can smoke, roast, and sear on the same grill. You can go from low and slow, okay, on smoke boost mode, or crank this thing all the way to a heat sear at 600 degrees. It's got a full great sear zone, so you can put more food on the flame. Get fired up for your new Weber Searwood Pellet Grill.
Maui Nui is on a mission to help balance axis deer populations for the good of our environment, communities, and food systems on the island of Maui. They've shared over 126,000 pounds of nutrient-dense protein with the Maui community. Secure your spot now, become a snack subscriber, and join in helping to build more resilient food and ecosystems on Maui. Visit MauiNuiVenison.com. That's MauiNuiVenison.com. And use promo code BEAR for 20% off your first order.